Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingenstein. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingenstein with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're going to revisit a conversation that we had with Todd Henry. Todd is a author of 7 books, including The Accidental Creative, Die Empty, and Herding Tigers, which have been translated into more than a dozen languages. He speaks internationally on creativity, productivity, passion for work, and generating brilliant ideas. We're going to be talking about his book, The Motivation Code, Discover the Hidden Forces That Drive Your Best Work. Looking forward to today's conversation with Todd. Todd, I guess, first off, can you give us just a little bit of your story, a little bit of your background?
Sure. So I grew up in Southern Ohio, sort of surrounded by farms and fields and all of that, which in retrospect is really good for somebody who ends up doing creative things for a living, because I had lots of freedom to just sort of explore and had to, basically, if we wanted to have fun, we had to invent it. We had to make it up, you know. And then I went to school, studied marketing, got out of school, spent some time doing in the music business, actually, as a traveling performer for a couple of years. I'd partially working my way through school by playing music. And I thought, hey, I think maybe I'll try to make a run at this. But, you know, as these stories often go, I met a girl and she was in Cincinnati and realized, like, maybe the music business isn't the best long-term solution for stability in my life. And so ended up getting a job as a creative director for a nonprofit, spent several years building and leading a team there. And in the midst of that, in 2005, launched a podcast called The Accidental Creative, where I was just talking about what it's like to have to create on demand every day and some of the pressures and strategies for doing that. The podcast took off, started getting invitations to go and share insights with companies and at events and things, and then was offered a book deal with Penguin to write my first book, The Accidental Creative, which came out in 2011. And at that point, I left and started my own firm and basically have been doing consulting and training and speaking now for a little over a decade. I've written 5 books with Penguin Random House, The Accidental Creative, Die Empty, Louder Than Words, Herding Tigers, and the new book, The Motivation Code. So it's my 5th book in 10 years, which is crazy when you say it that way. But now that's what I do. I travel the world and I speak and consult and train people and teams how to be prolific, brilliant, and healthy all at the same time. Mm.
Good stuff. Yeah. And we'll talk a little bit about your most recent book in just a couple minutes. But yeah, it's great to hear your story. And I ask this question to most guests that we have on, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give a 22-year-old Todd?
I think the biggest advice would be nothing is as desperate as it feels right now. I mean, there are many moments in my life, in my 20s especially, where everything felt desperate. Everything felt like it's all going to fall apart. You know, something doesn't go right and, oh, this is the end, or everybody else is getting ahead of me, or, I'm not on the right path. And I think everything in your 20s feels like whatever decision you make is going to impact the rest of your life. The reality is there are a handful of decisions you make in your life that really do have those kinds of massive shockwave impacts on your life. But most decisions are recoverable if you make an error, and nothing is as urgent in the moment as it feels, I think, when you're in your 20s. And so I have a little saying, actually. I still write music from time to time, and I've been working on a little song. And it's funny, the hook of the song is, the older I get, the less I need to know. And I think there's some wisdom in that. I think the older you get, the more you realize that no individual single thing is unrecoverable in your life. It's usually a series of really bad decisions that get you in trouble, but you know, it's not any one individual decision. And so making decisions and moving on, you know, like Kierkegaard said, you know, decisions part fog on stagnant waters, at least for a little while, right? And so I think just refusing to be stuck and making decisions and continuing to navigate forward, I think, is what I would tell my early 20 something self.
Okay. Great advice. So you've released a new book right in the middle of COVID. And we talked a little bit about that, but it's a great topic and one that personally I have a lot of interest because we use the assessment in our practice and our executive search. And would love to get your thoughts around kind of how you got connected to the motivation code and just some of the lessons that you've said in your new book. And I've got a copy here that just came out last week, right?
Yeah, last Tuesday, as we're recording. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, how did you get to know about the research and what you've written about in this book?
Thank you, by the way, for not asking the question every other podcast host has asked, which is what motivated you to write the book? It's like the layup. So. Thank you. So I had no intention of writing this book and frankly wasn't even terribly interested in this area, in this topic. You know, I felt like in my mind, you know, I've read a lot of books about motivation and self-determination theory and some of the research into what drives us. And frankly, felt like those books had been written, you know, so I wasn't really all that interested. And about 4 years ago, a friend of mine, Rod Penner, emailed me out of the blue and he said, "Hey, I want you to take this motivation assessment that a team and I have been working on for the last number of years." And, you know, I don't know about you, when I hear assessment, my eyes roll to the back of my head and I start, you know, numbing out. And I think, great, I need another set of letters to attach to myself. That's really what I need, sure. You know? But I thought, you know, hey, Rod's a brilliant guy. I know that he wouldn't be working on this and working with this team if it wasn't substantial. So I took the assessment, which at the time was called MCORE. Now it's called MCODE, Motivation Code. Took the assessment. And frankly, what I learned, Mark, absolutely blew me away. I discovered patterns in my life that I'd always suspected, but didn't really know that they were, you know, what they were. I didn't have language for them, but suddenly I had language for things that had been recurring themes in my life. Moments when I felt deeply engaged, moments when I struggled, why certain leadership roles were like hand in glove for me and why I've struggled in other leadership roles. Why certain collaborative relationships were fruitful and others were less fruitful. You know, all of these things became really apparent to me. And it was all because I had learned what it is that uniquely drives me. I discovered my motivation code. And so I knew that I wanted to try to get this into the world in whatever way I could, you know, try to get this into the marketplace in broader fashion. But there was a problem. The problem was I had just signed a book deal for my fourth book called Herding Tigers that came out in 2018. So I've been kind of working with Rod and Dr. Joshua Miller and Dr. Todd Hall over the course of the last 4 years to pull together a book that really encapsulates this research that has been going on, as you know well, for over 50 years, beginning with Arthur Miller Jr. and the decades of research that he and the team at SEMA did in order to sort of distill the patterns that eventually became motivation code and the motivation code assessment. I think part of what really drew me in was this isn't just a bunch of people sitting around in a room thinking, how do we think people are motivated? You know, this is really the distillation of decades of research, over a million achievement stories, over 100,000 people have been through this assessment, and it's really been substantially validated by experts in the field. And really, you know, I mentioned I'd read all the books, I'd read all the stuff about, you know, all the latest research on motivation, and this really is unlike anything else I've seen. This is a very unique twist, because what we're really describing is, you know, the research shows that intrinsic and extrinsic motivation modify one another, that they're not completely discrete. What this research shows is exactly how intrinsic and extrinsic motivation modify one another for individuals, like uniquely, how individuals respond uniquely to extrinsic motivators, which is something that I had never seen before. So this, I feel like this really takes the research into motivation to a completely new level and personalizes it in a way that's very practical.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of my personal story with the assessment was I took it years ago and forgot that I had taken it, put it in with all my other assessments. I'm one of these guys that likes assessments, which is kind of weird, but my wife can attest to that. So well, I'm putting them through the testing. So I took the assessment years ago, forgot about it. I never actually turned it back in and put it in a file somewhere. And then when I joined SEMA, the thing that attracted me to the organization was the assessment and the insights that it gives. And so I took it again, went to file the new copy, and I took the old, and it was I laid them side by side, and it was exactly 7 years had passed, same results. And that's one of the things about motivation that find it doesn't change over time. It stays constant, where EQ changes, but motivation definitely stays a constant in our life. Talk a little bit about.
I try to share that with people. I've been talking about this a lot, and people don't believe me. But I share stories like the story you just shared. You know, you're not the only one who has done this, who's taken this assessment multiple years separated, and you know, there could be some shifting among the top motivations. Maybe like, you know, maybe your number one is now your number two, your number two is now your number four, but generally the top five kind of hold together pretty consistently over time. And not only that, but it's also not situational. People think, well, I'm differently motivated at work than I am at home, or than I am, you know, in my spiritual life, or than I am in my financial, you know. No, it's consistent throughout your life, which is incredible too, to think that I am motivated the same way with my spouse as I am with a business partner or when I'm closing a deal. You know, people don't like to think that, but it's really true. It's what we've discovered.
The validation I use with candidates that we take through, our finalist candidates go through the assessment, is validate it with your spouse, because that's gonna tell whether this is the case. And they always come back and say, yeah, it they pegged me, and my spouse told me, yeah, this is accurate. And so it's definitely something that talk a little bit about. You know, we have the 27 themes and the families that are part of that. There's definitely a lot of combinations that people can have in their life. And there's 17,500 combinations that are possibilities. Talk a little bit about that and that the research that validates that.
Yeah. So what's interesting is, you know, a lot of people will take an assessment and they'll say, oh, I'm such and such, right? Like, right. This is my top motivation. And so therefore, this is who I am, or this is how I engage most deeply. And that's kind of true, but it's not fully true, because in reality, your top three to five motivations kind of move together and modify one another. So someone who's, say, number one motivation is excel, and whose number two motivation is collaborate, is going to behave and feel engagement very differently than somebody whose number one is excel and number two is evoke recognition, for example. You know, so if number one is excel, that means you want to be the best. You're going to measure yourself against other people. You're going to, you know, always be at the front. You're going to be out there chasing whatever the next goal is. The next, you know, it's important to you to measure yourself according to standards, and that you're exceeding those standards. But if collaborate is your number two, you're going to do that with other people. You're going to be pulling other people along with you. You're going to want to pull other people toward those standards. And so if your number two is evoke recognition, you're going to be doing that and then looking around to see if anybody's noticing, right? Does anybody see how I'm excelling here? And so, and by the way, neither of those is more right than the other. It's not like there are good motivations, bad motivations. Every motivation is a gift, and we need people who are motivated by all of these things in order to have a healthy, diverse, functioning organization. But some people, when they, and I don't know if you've experienced this, I've definitely experienced, when people discover their top motivations for the first time, some people are really disappointed. They actually, oh, well, I wish evoke recognition wasn't my top motivation, because I just feel so selfish, because we've trained ourselves that that's a selfish thing. No. It's fine. That's not saying that, you know, if you can't function unless somebody recognizes you. What it says is that you come alive when people recognize you, that that's where you get energy, that that's something that really propels you, that drives you, is you want to gain the recognition of people who are important to you. There's nothing wrong with that. It's perfectly fine. And by the way, people who are, you know, speakers, entertainers, actors, people who are out there in the world who are routinely in the spotlight, I'm glad those people are driven to gain the recognition of the people around them. I'm glad that they want people to notice, you know, who they are. And then be unique is another one that I often hear. A lot of actors, musicians, people like that are driven by this motivation called be unique. They want to separate themselves, show that they're different from. I'm glad those people are in the world, right? Because those are the kinds of people who add color and flavor to our lives and our organizations in a way that others don't. And so, like, if everybody was make the grade motivated and we were all basically just trying to hit the standard of the organization, right. And do I fit in? Do you fit in? We all fit in. Okay, good. You know, what a, I mean, I'm sorry, but what a boring world it would be if everybody was motivated the same way. So I'm grateful, but we have to embrace our motivations, not run away from them. And we certainly can't resent the way that we're motivated. We just have to learn to embrace it and bring it to our work. And that's really the key insight for me. And sorry, I'll just keep talking. So cut me off. Okay. But one of the key insights for me in all of this research was we tend to wait for our tasks to motivate us. We tend to wait for our tasks to engage us. We think if I just had the perfect job, then I would feel motivation every day. And the reality is there's no perfect job for you. The reality is you have to train yourself to bring your motivation to your work rather than waiting for your work to motivate you. And when you train yourself to do that, it completely changes the calculus. But the first step in that is becoming aware of what it is that really drives you.
So understanding kind of our own personal motivation is important, but also you mentioned the motivation of others, that sometimes we look through our lens of our motivation and think that's what other people, how they're motivated, which isn't the case. So as a leader, how important is it for you to understand kind of how your team is motivated and how can that increase as far as your effectiveness and success as a team?
It's incredibly critical. As managers, we tend to try to use blunt force instruments to motivate people. We use pay raises, we use perks, we use words of encouragement. Sometimes we use fear, which is not healthy, but we do it, right? We dangle potential punishment over people if they don't get things done, you know? You hear coaches scream at kids on basketball teams. And, you know, some kids respond to that because maybe some kids are motivated by meet the challenge. It's like, well, okay, coach is challenging me. I'm going to step up. But other kids are motivated differently on a team, you know? And so screaming at them and just using that blunt force instrument, it not only is it not going to help, it's actually going to maybe do damage to the relationship. So understanding what it is that uniquely drives the people on your team unlocks your ability as a manager to speak directly into their life and to animate them and engage them in a way that will make them not only feel more driven to perform, but more attached to you, more attached to the culture. It's going to create a sense of belonging, like I'm understood here, which is really important. It's going to create a sense of psychological safety, which research has shown in recent years is absolutely essential to high functioning teams to have a sense of psychological safety. It really is like having the code to open a locker versus taking a sledgehammer to the locker, you know, which is what a lot of managers have been doing. So absolutely critical on that, from that standpoint, but also critical from the standpoint of thinking about how you diversify and structure your team. If you have five people on your team driven to bring to completion, you're going to get a lot of stuff done, but frankly, it's probably going to be a lot of substandard work because you're going to be checking stuff off and moving on because that's how people are driven. It's where they get their energy. But if you have all explore people on your team, you're never going to get anything done because you're always going to be asking, why are we doing this? And what's going on? You know, you're never getting anything done. So having a diversity of people on your team in terms of how they see the world and think about the world, but also not just how they see and think about the world, but also how they communicate with one another and collaborate with one another and understanding those different motivations, being able to have meaningful conversations in the midst of that so that conflict doesn't disrupt the team. Explore and bring to completion are going to have conflict. They are at some point because explore is going to say, well, have we asked this? And what if we try that? And let's go over here and bring to completion saying, are you kidding me? Let's just get it done and move on. Right. So we have to have visibility into those motivations so that we can have meaningful conversation, empathetic conversation, and raise the EQ of the entire organization.
Yeah, absolutely. Is what we've found is in our practice is that it helps people understand kind of from how people will show up in their work. And if you understand that, you can realize that we all have the positive side, our motivation, but there is also the shadow side that to be aware of and how to help that to not become the major focus. Talk a little bit about the shadow side, some of the things that people should be aware of as far as in their motivation.
Yeah. So any bright light is going to cast a shadow. It's just, you know, it's just the physics of nature, right? Like when you have a bright light, there's going to be a shadow as a result of that. And the shadow side of your motivation is the potentially unhealthy way that it can take root in your life. So, for example, one of my motivations is influence behavior. That's one of my top motivations. It's my number three, actually. I want to see that, like right now you're nodding as we're talking. That's really, 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 that's like narcotics to somebody driven to influence behavior, right? Like if I can see you're nodding, it's like, oh, okay, yeah. And that's great. When I'm speaking to groups of people, which I do routinely in non-COVID times, I love seeing heads nod. I love hearing people laugh. I love seeing that I'm influencing them, that I'm changing the way that they're responding to me. But there could be one person sitting in the front row with their arms crossed, and I don't care if there are 10,000 people in the room. All of a sudden, I am obsessed with that one person in the room who's not nodding, whose arms are crossed, who has a scowl on their face. And it could be, I could be killing it with everybody else. But if that person doesn't respond to me, I'll walk off stage thinking, well, that was a failure, right? This is an example of a shadow side type attribute. Somebody who's driven to influence behavior often is prone to the whims of anybody who they don't feel like they can influence, or if they're not getting influence, they'll keep trying. Like my wife frequently says to me, you've just said the same thing 10 times in a row. And I'll say, I know, I'm waiting for you to show me that you hear what I'm saying. And she said, well, I heard you 10 times ago, but I'll just keep repeating myself because I'm waiting for that nod. I'm waiting for the smile. I'm waiting to see that I'm sinking in some way, right? So it's an example of a shadow side attribute where I can seek to have influence in ways maybe that isn't welcome. Another one of my motivations is make an impact, right? So obviously I like to see the direct impact in my work, but that can have a shadow side attribute sometimes of trying to create impact where it's not welcome. So it's not an infrequent occurrence for me to be in a meeting where I'm auditing the meeting. I'm sort of asked to come in and just kind of sit and listen and audit. And within 5 minutes, I have the whiteboard marker in my hand and I'm standing at the whiteboard and I'm sketching out a framework for the discussion, right? Because that's how I'm wired. I want to have an impact. I want to see the impact of my work. Or if the impact of the work isn't there, if I'm not seeing the kind of impact I want, I might just walk away from something instead of staying engaged with it because it loses my interest. So that's just an example of the shadow side as well. So we need to make certain that we are not falling prey to these shadow side attributes, but are instead leveraging the best parts of our motivation in our engagement each day. And just having those as watch points is really, really helpful.
So during this time, we live in a kind of a weird time as people are working virtually that weren't before. And, you know, there's been a lot of virtual work in the last number of years, but it's definitely been increased substantially in the last number of months. If somebody is, maybe their motivation is to collaborate and now they're working by themselves at home, they feel like, you know, how would you lead a person or leading differently during this time that everybody's working virtually or a lot of people are?
Yeah. So I think that collaborate example is a great one. And it's one that I've actually thought a lot about in the midst of all of this. People who are driven to collaborate are people who get their energy from being around other people, from moving things forward together, being a part of a team, right? That's doing things. And often comes paired with motivations like serve or some of the other motivations where you know it's about like being around others and sort of helping advance the cause and often get their identity from being in a team environment. So being on their own can be really, really challenging. So I think it's really important if you recognize that you are building structures, systems, practices, rhythms into your life right now to make sure you're connecting with other people. And it doesn't have to be in person, obviously. You know, there are some real dangers to doing that, but even just establishing some discretionary time on Zoom to be with people face to face, to talk through things, talk through projects, to ask questions, to just share what you're experiencing, almost like virtual water cooler time, right? So like, you know, you miss those little casual interactions that are often so much a part of the vibe of somebody who's driven to collaborate. Structure those into your day. Hey, we're going to have lunch together today on Zoom. We're just going to eat lunch and just talk about our day and talk about what's going on and talk about what we're experiencing and sort of recapture some of that water cooler vibe. I think it's so important. Rhythm and infrastructure is more important than ever right now because those natural pieces of infrastructure aren't there that were there only months ago that just sort of naturally brought us together. We're all in the same building. We're having meetings in the same rooms. You know, those are just natural pieces of infrastructure that have all been taken away from us. So we have to build the infrastructure that we need right now, the scaffolding to support our ability to engage.
Right. So you've written 5 books. What books have influenced your life that you would recommend to any leader?
Great question. So I'll
besides
give you
your 5.
Well, besides my 5, yes. Well, let's see. The Actual Creative. No. Yeah, I would say. So I'll give you a business book, and I'll give you a non-business book, if that's okay.
Sure.
So the non-business book, we'll start with that. Probably Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl is a book that's most influenced my life. Viktor Frankl was a Jewish psychoanalyst, was put in a concentration camp. He lost his life's work during World War II, lost his life's work. Family members were killed, had to endure just the unbelievable atrocities of concentration camps. Came out on the other side, and he wrote this book, Man's Search for Meaning. And it was primarily about how misplaced our understanding of meaning in life often is. You know, we're often looking for life to give us what we want instead of asking, what can I bring to life? Which I think undergirds a lot of this motivation code work, right? It's instead of pursuing what you want out of life, you need to stop and ask, what is life asking of me? And often the way that we're naturally wired is the best reflection of what's being called out of us. And so just really, really love that book and recommend it to anybody just as a baseline for really anything. The other really good book that I read recently that I would recommend to any leader, and this is a recent publication actually, is the book Principles by Ray Dalio, who is, you know, sort of a leader in the world of investing and whatnot. But he basically wrote a book about the core principles that allowed him, enabled him to be able to build his organization over the course of years. And it's not just about organizations. It's also about, you know, individual principles, holding to individual principles and living by principle rather than living by whim. So phenomenal book. And then as always, The Leadership Challenge by Kouzis and Posner is always kind of one of my go-tos. I think that's just maybe one of the best leadership books ever written, quite frankly. So.
Great. Well, so outside of work, what do you do to recharge?
I am right now working on an album, a music album in my home office. I haven't written and recorded music in 15 years, and I started earlier this year, and then COVID obviously has given me a little more time to work on some of that, you know, because we're home, we're not running around on the weekends like we used to. And so it's kind of funny because, you know, 15 years ago or 20 years ago when I was in Nashville, it would have cost me $20,000 to do some of the stuff I can do now with my laptop and, you know, like some right. of the, what's available. Like I can get the same quality output as it would have cost me like $20,000 20 years ago. So it's been really fun to kind of play around with that and make some new music.
So how would somebody learn more about the new book as well as some of the other things that you're doing?
Yeah. So the best place to go for motivation code is motivationcode.com. And there you can learn about the assessment. You can learn about the solutions that we offer and also the book and whatnot is there. And if you want to learn more about me, my podcasts, I have a podcast called The Accidental Creative, launched in 2005, been doing episodes every week since 2005, going to cross 10 million downloads this month, which is kind of a cool milestone. So you can learn more about that at toddhenry.com.
Well, Todd, definitely wish you success with your new book and all that you're doing, and definitely would love to talk with you further on some of your other topics in the future, and definitely wish you the best in all of your work.
Thanks so much, and thanks so much for having me on and all the great work that you do as well.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.